Hi, it's Diane. It's February 5th, and I'm with the Wednesday at 3 group, and we're going to get started in just a minute. Thanks for being patient. So did you survive Blizzard 2014, Whitney?
We did. Timing couldn't have been better. I was, like I said, I travel for my job, so I drove to Gainesville, Georgia, happened to drive back in town about noon, got the messages to pick up the kids. So picked up the kids, and by 2 o'clock, I was able to cut through my neighborhood home from their school. So, yeah, luckily I was okay. The kids were good.
Yeah.
Minus the chaos in the house.
Yeah, all the stories that I've heard. I mean, it's funny. Everybody's got a story, right?
Right.
We didn't. We were really lucky, too. So I think it's, everybody was home and everybody was safe. So all good. So how have things been going for you since the last call?
Like I said, it's been a little chaotic because none of it has been, you know, in our normal structured environment. Just, you know, with kids coming and going, but it hasn't been, you know, routine, but we're surviving.
Yeah. What's been the hardest thing for you?
For me personally, it's just, I mean, from the beginning of school this year till now, there hasn't been any consistency. It's been too hard to keep a routine. They've been out of school or in school for snow days, winter days, holidays, and we can't get into a rhythm. And that's hard enough for me, much less, you know, it's already hard enough for the kids, but it makes it doubly hard when we're all kind of ADHD and trying to manage the chaos.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. Now you say that would be a really good conversation to have with the group, which is kind of what's the way to create enough structure. You know, what's the most important part of the structure, and what do you let go of? And when you've got kind of that sort of, okay, the kids are home or they're not home, or where do we, you know, what are we doing, where are we going? And it's the same sort of thing when you get into summer or when you get into holiday breaks. It's kind of like what structures are important. And you know, we have this conversation at our house all the time because my kids are both teens and they want to sleep in. Well, you know, I like Jacob to take medication, you know, even and some days if he's got a big homework or an assignment or something like that, it's valuable to have him medicate. And if he sleeps until noon, it messes everything up, you know. So it's that sort of stuff where it's like, well, how do you figure out what the right mixture is? It's the same thing if your kids are really their eating cycles end up getting off a little bit because they're at home, and that can cause some challenges, or their rest cycles and that sort of thing.
Right. Yeah, there's just, I think the lack of routine makes it more challenging, and then they push more because they kind of feel like they're getting away with things, something that's not the norm already, whether it's eating later, watching another show, or whatever it is. I think it's the sense of, oh, now I can get one more thing or one more. So then whatever you kind of had held hard and fast when you do have a routine, they're pushing against everything.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's the piece of it, is like figuring out what of your routine is most important and getting really
right
on that at the front end, and then saying, you know, what can we reasonably let go of and what can't we? And then I think the other piece that I encourage everybody to do is to let go consciously. And so if you're saying, okay, we're going to break the rules and we're going to let people watch TV for an extra hour today, then make sure you say it out loud, and so that everybody knows that we're breaking the rule. Yay, woohoo! We're having a party because we're breaking the rules.
Right.
And so then that leaves you off the hook of saying, well, you did it before, why don't you do it again? And it kind of takes the pressure off.
Right.
And
you can decide.
Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I have a technical question, too, before we officially start, if that's okay.
Yeah, sure.
On the website, where can I find, like when I'm not home, where can I find the workbook on here that I can pull up and look through? Because I don't have it with
right
me.
So if you go to are you on the homepage?
I'm in the members login page.
Right. So it should say Coaches Club Recording.
Okay.
And then it's PSS Program Materials. It's the third tab on that page.
Okay. Perfect.
The 2013 workbook.
Got it. yeah, from it's another thing I don't have with me all the time is not having access to a printer or just, you know, all my materials. I've got things in one place and another and want to be able to do it when I'm traveling too.
Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense. So I'm just trying to see who's going to join us today. Because I did get an email from a couple people who said that they didn't know. Judy said she couldn't. Beth said she's switching groups. I haven't heard from Jill or Wendy or, okay, cool. Well, I don't want to hold you up anymore, and I want to kind of keep moving forward. I think we're just kind of informally talking about what's been going on for you. Did you, how did you do with curiosity? Just being curious.
I'm trying to think, you know, I'm trying to think what I really, like I said, I mean, all bets were off this week. Whatever I was supposed to remember probably went straight out. But I think in a couple situations I did a better job with Preston, you know, just stopping and listening to what was going on. And I did, you know, try to, you know, incorporate humor a little bit more this time instead of just, you know, completely coming unglued and losing it. But, you know, and I just tried different things with him, but more, I think, being curious about his issues and his, you know, even if the answer is no, okay, giving him a soapbox and letting him say, okay, this is why I really feel like I should be able to have Brody spend the night, you know, or have a friend spend the night, and just, you know, let him say what he needed to say and just say, okay, I hear you, that I understand that's important to you, but we're not going to do it, you know, we're going to do it, but not tonight. So I think just try to be engaged in the moment and stay and not be so quick to just give an answer, but to listen a little bit more.
Yeah.
To see where he's coming from.
Yeah, two things in what you're saying. The first is that, you know, it's you're using some kind of tool to break that trigger cycle, right? So, you're not supposed to think, just go, no, we can't do that. Are you kidding me? Or whatever they ask, you know, whatever your normal natural response is. But then, you know, once you get there, then curiosity can be a place to open the door for a bigger discussion.
Right.
And then the other thing I loved about what you just said was that if you can find the space to listen first, I find that when you have to give your kids bad news, the most powerful part of that is finding a way to acknowledge and validate what they're going through, which is another great coaching tool, which is, okay, you know, wow, I can tell you're really upset about this. This must, you know, it must make you really angry to know that, you know, we aren't going to be able to do blah, 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 and I know you really kind of has your heart set on it. And it doesn't necessarily mean you have to change your mind, but, you know, feeling like our emotions are a natural reaction to what's going on for us helps us. I mean, if you think about what it is for yourself, I know for me personally, if somebody goes, yeah, of course you're disappointed, or of course you're a little bit frustrated, or of course you're angry, you kind of go, oh, okay, I'm normal, you know, and it feels good. And I think that our kids want the same thing. And so, you know, I think that the bonus points on curiosity are validating our kids' emotions and our kids' perspectives. Doesn't mean we need to buy into them. It doesn't mean we have to agree with them, but acknowledging it, and the language you use is anybody who is in your place would feel that way. You know, and that's the reality, is that I may not agree with you. I may not feel that way. I may not think it's okay, but your reaction is a natural response. So that's great.
Right. I think just any time I can stop what I'm doing, and so he's got my full attention, and makes him feel important. So you know, anytime I'm not going from cooking to picking things up the floor to taking the dog out, and actually can stop. I mean, because it's constant chatter. I mean, constant talking. So I could not. I mean, it'd be impossible for the whole evening of picking him up from school to going to bed for him to have my full attention. But when I do take the time to actually stop, when something's really getting heated and he's getting more and more frustrated, I'm learning to stop in the moment because it'll serve me better later and address it, you know, and so he's got my attention versus just kind of keeping going through the motions.
That's a great insight, Winnie, because I think that being curious, it forces you to pay attention. And a lot of times we're kind of giving our kids half of our attention, especially because of their little chatterboxes and they're constantly going and going. It's like at some point we get exhausted and we turn off. We can't pay attention 24/7. But if we know we're curious, it engages us at a different level in the conversation. We're receiving instead of giving, and it makes it a different type of an interaction. That's awesome.
Okay, yeah, I agree.
So when was it difficult?
I think, well, it's been several things, but I mean, the noise level in the house, like I don't know if this is normal, but my son is the loudest child on earth. And it's not just me. I mean, everybody, all the other kids in the neighborhood, I mean, the parents in the neighborhood say, I mean, he's ear piercing. I mean, just when he's talking, playing, screaming, interacting, it's, you know, just bringing the noise level back down. And I mean, that sounds so crazy, but it just makes everything else seem so chaotic. And then adding that on top of kids coming and going from inside, you know, being out of school 3 days, it's been nonstop. So I think that's been the most difficult in the lack of structure.
Yeah, so what is it about the noise that's most difficult?
Oh, for me that's the hardest? Because I can't concentrate on anything else that needs to, I mean, my daughter doesn't get my attention. You know, like, for example, last night we were working on her Cleopatra project for school. And I don't even know what he was doing, but it's just, you know, screaming, yelling, chasing the dog, turning up the TV, mommy, this, you know, just whatever it was distracting. So I feel like if he doesn't have my full attention to A, listen or, you know, attend to his needs or say, hey, bring the noise level down. I mean, whatever it is, it's pulling my attention away from other things in the house that need to get done.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and so it feels like, I mean, I was listening to you talk about it. It feels like, you know, even if you wanted to pay attention, it's just you see that interruption as a threat almost. Like it's like I want to be doing this, and I've got to be doing this because he's in my face so much. Is that
right? It's
yeah.
It's like it's almost like if he could, he'd demand and suck up every single minute of my time, but it can't. You know, it can't happen that way. So he's going to do whatever he can to not, and I don't think it's deliberate either, but I think it's just, you know, it's just makes it hard to function.
Yeah. So what's a reasonable boundary you could put in place that would support you in trying to be productive, which is what it sounds like it gets in the way of and honors the relationship?
I would love to be for him to sit in his room and do something, but he doesn't.
Hmm.
You know, I'd love for him to tell him, okay, Preston, if you sit in your room for 10 minutes, I mean, I'm not asking for a lot here, and, you know, play a video game, read a book, or, you know, look at, I mean, you can't read yet, but, you know, just other things, something, but then it's that he won't do that either.
What do you think that's all about?
I have absolutely no idea. I mean, you know, he just doesn't do it. It's like, you know, if they go in there and say, and he'll come out and come out and come out.
Okay.
And it doesn't matter what I mean, what I say, you know.
So if the ADHD brain doesn't do anything without a motivation, what's his motivation for staying in the room?
For not staying in the room?
For staying in the room. Well, actually, both of those questions would be good, which is that what's his motivation for coming out and what's his motivation for staying in?
What would his motivation be for staying in? I mean, if he was in there doing a video game, he may stay in there for a little bit, but I don't think he would stay in there and do it by himself. He always wants somebody else around him.
Okay. So if you were curious, what would you know about him?
You know, he feels safe with, you know, the comfort of having family around, whether it's a dad, me, or a sister.
Okay.
It was a security thing, I guess.
So is there a way for you to feel safe, or to have him feel safe and feel connection to you and to get some space to do what you need to do?
I don't know what that looks like. You know, I don't, off the top of my head. I mean, if my husband's there, that's helpful because, you know, he can sit with him or do something with him. But it would be nice, and I don't know if this is an age-appropriate thing, but I would think at 6, it's not too much to ask for him to be, you know, sitting in his room doing something by himself without having a parent or a sibling or a friend in there.
Yeah, well, and so the phrase that kind of just popped into my head, if I can share it, is parallel play.
Yeah, okay.
You know, so it's kind of like, you know, what could he be doing, even if it's in the same room as you, that
right.
would be, you know, so and that's the thing to play with. You know, does he need to be in the same room? And so that maybe you pull a beanbag into the kitchen and he sits in the corner in the beanbag and reads a book while you're working on something in the kitchen. Or maybe it's, you know, you're working in the office or you're sitting on the bed next to each other and he's reading his book and you're reading your book. I mean, but it's just, those are two examples of kind of more parallel kinds of things that give him the security of being in the same space as you, because it sounds like that's important to him, but gives you the freedom from him bugging you all the time.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. But then I think that would give him enough, you know, leeway to say, oh, but my, you know, it's almost like he has to be talking. So then if we're in the same room, well, Mommy, can I show you this? Mommy, did you know that, you know? And so then I think I'd be constantly telling him, Preston, this is, you know, Mommy time with Cameron. We're going to finish this project. I think the interruption would be constant, too.
Yeah. So let's put that on hold, because I think that's a great place to kind of transition in. Does that sound like something you'd like to take aim on today, Whitney?
Sure. Yeah, that sounds good.
Okay. I don't want to change your mind if you had something else you were coming in with. But
no.
I'm going to encourage the folks that are listening in to take a minute. And then our conversation today is about perspective, which is one of my favorite topics. So take a minute and just figure out what you're going to take aim on and what area of focus you're going to focus in on over these next couple weeks as we talk about perspective. So perspective is really it's the third step in managing triggers. You know, so we talked about triggers, we talked about curiosity, we've talked about kind of self-care and some of these other things, but, you know, to remind ourselves of the four steps to escape the stress cycle and to manage triggers are: one is to recognize your triggers, two is to reclaim your brain and know, you know, whether it's taking a few sips of water or whether it's taking a deep breath or saying a mantra, whatever it is you do to kind of get out of that intense sort of reaction mindset. And then the third step is to choose a perspective, and then the fourth step is to take action. And perspective is one of the most empowering coaching tools that we have. And so I'd encourage you to think about it, not just for yourself, but also we'll talk a little bit at the end about how we could use this as a tool in working with our kids. But the concept here is that, you know, we can't change the things that happen to us. We can change how we see them or how we react to them. And so if you think about that situation where we're triggered and we're feeling like, oh my gosh, this is terrible, I gotta fix this, or I can't handle this, I gotta run away, I gotta get out of this, which is, you know, the fight or flight reaction. Typically what happens is that, you know, we're feeling triggered, we're feeling threatened. And it's because of a fear that we've created, a fear that's happening. In some instances, it's a real fear. You know, so it's that, you know, we're about to be in a car accident. That's a real fear. But the reality is that with triggers and with the threat cycle, a large portion of the time, what we're afraid of is something that's not really actually happening right now. It's a worry. And so what happens practically is that We don't just always live in the now. We're thinking about what happened last week. We're worried about what's going to happen next week. I mean, we're in some other time and space other than what's actually happening now, and that's typically where our fears are. And with ADHD kids, a lot of our fears are projected forward. And so the threat is my child gets a zero on an assignment. The fear is my child's not going to get into college, and they're going to end up living in my basement when they're 25. You know, so the fear is not necessarily attached to the zero. The fear is attached to this future worry that we've created. And the reality is that worry is a natural human experience. We worry because if we don't know, if there's a vacuum in knowing, we automatically want to fill that in with something. So we create a story is actually what we do. And so the concept that I like to teach, and I did a workshop last Friday to talk, it was my From Stress to Success workshop, and we talk about the fact that, you know, if the brain is triggered by real threats as well as ones that we create in our mind, then there's an opportunity there, because if it's not happening right now, it's a story. And so the punchline is, if you're going to create a story, create one that makes you feel good. And the story I like to tell you relates to this, because your child is in elementary school, but it was a couple of years ago. My son was in third grade, and I was working on a project. I had a deadline, and I'm sitting at my desk at my computer, and an email pops in from my son's teacher. And it says, need to see you after school. Can you come by? And that's all the email said. And I went, okay, it's 12:30, 2:30. Yeah, I can come in. So I sent her a note back, said I'll be there at 2:30. And then went back and started working on my project. Well, lo and behold, I noticed myself getting distracted. And I'm like, okay, I'm worried about what she wants to talk to me about. I'm wondering what she wants to talk to me about. I'm trying to think in my head, did Jacob tell me about anything? Is there something I need to remember? You know, oh, did he get in trouble about X, Y, and Z? And I start telling a story to myself. And it was getting in the way, because I had this deadline, and I knew that I couldn't find out what she wanted me to talk to me about, but I didn't have a way to get through the next 2 hours, because it was just, I was obsessing it. I started obsessing about it, and it was getting in the way of my work. So I realized that I needed to create a different story. And so for the next 2 hours, in order to get me through the afternoon until I could really know what she wanted to talk to me about, I decided that he was getting an award. And so I didn't know what she wanted to talk to me about, and I said, well, he must be getting an award. Awards are coming up in a couple weeks here, and she wants to let me know about it, and that's why she's calling me into school. And so I realized that, number one, I was creating a story because I couldn't know what was really going on, and two, that story was getting in my way because I was feeling stressed out and threatened by it. And three, I could choose another perspective, another story that would make me feel better and would get me through to the next moment. And I think that that's what is empowering in this, is knowing that we can choose a different story and we can choose a different perspective. And if we can identify how our current perspective is getting in the way, it can help us in deciding that we want to choose another way of looking at it. So, Whitney, how does, you know, if you don't mind sharing, how does that resonate with you?
You know what I was thinking, though? I mean, because then, to me, well, then, I mean, that probably gets you through that moment, but then it's either in the back of your head thinking, okay, I know this really isn't true, and it's probably that, you know, he either got a bad grade on his test or he got in a fight with another kid, and so you still have to face reality when you get there.
I think that the important distinction is that it needs to be a story that you're willing to consider. You know, it's true. You don't need to jump in 100% and believe that it's 100% true, but you need to be willing to consider. So let's go back to the zero on the test. So just my son gets a zero on a test, and I'm worried that he's going to flunk out. He's never going to make it into college, and he's going to end up in my basement when he's 25. If I'm willing to consider that just because he got a zero on this one particular assignment, that it doesn't mean he's going to end up in my basement when he's 25, then it gives me space to take action. Whereas if I'm worried and all uptight about him not getting out of my basement, I'm going to be more paralyzed. I'm going to be in that fight or flight mode. So it's about choosing a perspective that will allow you to move forward. Does that distinction make sense?
That makes sense, yeah.
Yeah. So the other place that perspective is really important, I think, particularly with our kids, is in looking at their ADHD. And we talk a lot about taking a disability perspective. And I think that when we can, and what that means is just looking at our child's situation as not something that's necessarily in their control, but as something that is a result of their ADHD. And so if you picture a child in a wheelchair at the bottom of the stairs, and if you have a child who's in a wheelchair, you're not going to expect them to run up the steps. You're going to have a perspective that they find a way to get up the steps, whether it's asking you to carry them or pulling themselves up, or, you know, you're going to build a pulley system or whatever it is. But, you know, you're going to have a perspective that is, my child can't do this on their own. They need support. And I think that with our kids, taking that perspective of saying, instead of why did they not do this, being able to take the perspective that it's difficult for my child to do this. How can I help them? And so that subtle distinction of perspective can make a difference in terms of focusing on solving a problem instead of focusing on fixing something that's broken, which is, I think, where a lot of this gets stuck is, this is terrible, I need to fix it, versus this is a challenge that I need to support. And there's a subtle difference there, but from an energy and a productivity perspective, you're much more likely to be able to move the challenge forward if you're looking at it as an opportunity to support rather than a problem to fix. Does that distinction make sense?
Right. Yeah, we went through all of last year and even this year with timeouts. You know, I was horrified that my child even talking to other parents that – had, you know, their kids would get in trouble if they had a single timeout. Well, Preston would be in timeout every, you know, at least once a week, if not more. And so I started to have to celebrate, you know, even, it wasn't even about making it through a week. It was like, if we made it through a day, that was a big deal. And where, you know, if it was my daughter, it'd be a different situation. But with him, I learned to look at, you know, take a different perspective and realize, okay, this was a good day for him, so I need to celebrate that.
Yeah, yeah. So how does that shift in perspective help you to move to action?
Move to action?
Yeah.
I just think it's how I react differently. It's not the first question I ask them when I pick, you know, from before when it would be the first thing I say, you know, how many timeouts did you have today? Instead, you know, I've changed my thought, you know, just to listen a little bit more about his day, and usually he'll just tell me. But I think I was just so focused on his behavior and the potential of there being a timeout to realize, okay, you know, he's going to be a kid that gets put in timeout. So I've moved past this, and I think it's changed my reaction to him when, you know, when he tells me these things.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, so there becomes two parts of it. One is kind of, you know, is there something you can do to support him in having fewer timeouts, but at the same time, not seeing the fact that he's having them as being this terrible, horrible thing enables you to find it more important.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. So when you think about the situation with him and the needing the closeness and the attention and you needing some space, what story do you find yourself telling yourself about the situation?
I think I am just almost sitting there ready for him to interrupt, you know, just waiting for, just knowing in my head, okay, we're not going to get through this without him interrupting or needing my attention. Like, things aren't going to get done, this, you know, tonight because of him needing the attention. And I think that gets my anxiety up.
Okay.
You know, I just especially with my daughter having such a big project due, and I understand this is her one of her first big presentations in second grade, and so she, you know, I think it's just that the anxiety of sitting there thinking, okay, when's it, you know, just kind of that being tense and looking over my shoulder, like, okay, I can't even give her my full attention because I'm just waiting for him to do something, or
right.
He is doing something.
Yeah. So you're instead of just giving him space, you're assuming that he's not going to want the space, and any minute he's going to be bugging you.
Right.
Okay. And so it sounds like that's getting in the way. Is that fair?
Yes. But I mean, usually that is what happens. I mean, I don't think I have a perspective on, like, I don't think I'm making the story worse. It is worse. I mean, it's
okay.
Reality is what's happening. So.
So how do you feel about coming up with a solution?
Yeah. But in a moment, it's so hard to think about what the best one would be, I think.
Yeah. So what are three different things you could do?
What are three different things?
Three different things you could do, yeah.
You know, like I said, you can sit here and play with something, you know, whether it's, you know, look at a book or play with your toys with me here in the room. You have a choice of doing that or going in your own room. I mean, giving him an option of what of the two things he would like to do, let him know that there's a consequence, but if he can't leave, you know, Cameron and I to get our project done for the next 15 minutes or so, then, you know, he could choose to lose a play date with a neighbor down the street or something that he would like to do. Those are the two things that come to mind.
Yeah, so does he respond better to carrots or to sticks?
I'm not sure. It just depends on the moment. I'm not sure.
Yeah, because obviously every family is different. Every kid is different. But I think part of it, if you're putting in motivation, which is what the consequence is, the motivator to get him to do it, you know, that it's in order to set yourself up for success with it, it's important to kind of dig in and figure out whether it really does motivate him or whether it makes him feel defeated. So it's like, I know I can't do this, so why should I bother? And so, you know, with a lot of these things, particularly if you see that it's part of his personality style, and this is part of his personality style, is that he likes to be close and he likes to be clingy. He's probably, I don't know if he's extroverted. I don't know if he's just, he could be an external processor. He could be just a cuddly kid, you know, all those things. And so part of what you're trying to do is to, you know, set the groundwork for how to encourage him to be more independent, to play independently. And so maybe, you know, having a reward where, okay, let's try it for an hour. And if you can stay and play independently for 10 minutes during this 1 hour period, you get a check mark. And if, you know, for every check mark you get, then you get an extra 5 minutes of reading with mom at before bedtime or whatever it is that he likes that's more connected. So it's kind of like that sort of, I'm getting rewarded with what I want by delaying what I want. Does that make sense?
Right. And I actually like that idea, but I think he's so immediate with things. I don't think a check mark would do it. I think it would have to be something right then.
Okay.
You know,
so what might you do that would be a right then sort of thing?
I mean, he's always after my phone. I mean, 10 minutes on my phone or dessert or, you know, time with mommy or something like, you know, something along those lines.
Mm-hmm. And so maybe it's something you build up. I mean, he's only six, so this is a challenge. It's kind of like finding, you know, what's a reasonable amount of time for him to do it. And maybe if he just does it for 5 minutes, maybe if he does it for 10 minutes, and then you build up, and so then it becomes 15 minutes, and it becomes 20 minutes, and then maybe it's two 20-minute time periods, because 20 minutes may be the most realistic amount of time that he can do something independently. But if you can
right.
set a reward system, and maybe he would be happy with, you know, putting a marble in a bowl, you know, so it's like he gets to get up, and when the timer goes off, if he stayed quiet the whole time, he gets to get up and go put the marble in the bowl, and then he goes and gets to reset the timer again. You know, so he's actually doing something, and it's his job. Okay, you did it. You get to go put the marble in the bowl and reset the timer. Let's do our happy mm-hmm. dance. You know, maybe you do a quick happy dance, and, you know, you do a little dance party in the kitchen because he did it. You know, so it's kind of finding
right.
interim solution and finding the longer-term reward that will be a balance for him to accomplish both. And then when he gets older, you know, you're setting the system up that says in the future we're going to, you know, this is the way we work things. We set timers, we create rewards, we create motivators, and then we put them in place.
Yeah, I think I actually do think that he would like that, and just the action and, you know, the physical touch of, you know, the marbles and seeing it fill up. I think he actually would like that.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's, you know, just play with it a little bit and figure out what's going to be most helpful for him. And from a perspective, you know, so going, taking us back to the perspective, so what do you need to be willing to consider is true in order to, you know, take action in this situation?
What do I need to say one more time, just a second?
What do you need to be able to consider? What do you need to be willing to consider is true in order to be able to take action here?
Oh, to believe that he's capable of doing it, because
okay.
I think it already in my head that I think that he won't. He's not capable of even doing it. So why even? I think it just continues the breakdown of. You know, being able to get anything done, because I don't even think that he's capable of it.
Right, and it's crazy making, because you sit there and it's like every time you come up with a good idea, you're like, well, it won't work anyway. Why should I bother? And then you're back in the same place that you were.
Right.
So can I offer an alternative perspective?
Sure.
I have every confidence that if you play with this a little bit, that you'll come up with something that he is able to do that will be some help for you and a stepping stone an even bigger help for you.
Yeah, I mean, he's a smart boy and he's a sweet boy, and there has to be it's you know, it's not fair to him also to automatically think the worst. Oh, he's not capable when he is. It's just the time. I mean, a lot of this goes back to being a working mom. I mean, it's the time to invest and figuring out what works and trying different things. And
it takes a lot of creativity, but that's the thing that just kind of popped in my head, if I can share it, is what is his perspective on helping mommy?
He likes to help mommy when there's a reward. I mean, he's always the kid that wants something for doing something, and we're trying to get mm-hmm. out of that. But I mean, you know, I think time with mommy is reward in itself, and I think he, you know, consciously, I don't know if he would agree with that too, but I mean, he's always the kid that wants, you know, a tangible reward.
Right. So
I don't know, so I guess both.
So if he's the kid that always wants to help mommy, how could that perspective help this situation?
It could, if you explain it to him that way, that by giving, you know, mommy 10 or 15 minutes to do whatever the task is I need to complete, you know, he's helping me, and you know, that makes mommy happy, that makes us both happy, I guess.
Yeah. So you had a question there, you said I guess. So
I don't know. I mean, I just sometimes he seems so, you know, and it's all about him. So I don't know. Sometimes I don't know, you know, if he would you care whether it is helping mommy. I know that he does like, you know, he does like to, but at the same time, it's more about me, me, me. And
yeah.
So, it'd be something I'd have to play with to see if it actually were true.
Yeah. So how willing are you to consider that there's an opportunity here to try it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I definitely am willing to try it because that have this, I mean, just from how this week has gone, we have to start working towards some solutions. So I'd definitely be willing to try and see what works.
Well, and I think this is the thing that happens is that, you know, we if we're in a situation where the alternative perspective, the, oh, he'll never be able to do this, which is the alternative perspective, is so heavy that it's about finding something that feels reasonable. So I'm willing to consider that once this week, he'll be able to do it. I'm willing to consider that he can do it for 2 minutes, even if he can't do it for a full 15. Or I'm willing to consider that by the time he's 7, we'll have a solution for how he can do this. You know, so it's coming up with something that you're willing to believe. And the challenge is, I mean, from a developmental perspective, you've got a kid who's, you know, a few years behind his peers. You know, so if he's 6, let's say, you know, emotionally he's, or not emotionally, but from a developmental perspective, you know, if you compared him to a 3-year-old, you know, you wouldn't leave a 3-year-old alone to play by themselves.
Right, right.
And partially because they won't let you.
Right.
So it's that same sort of thing. So it's about getting to where he's at, getting the perspective of, okay, what can he reasonably do, and then how can I support him to the next level? So if right now he's at a level where he can reasonably give you 10 minutes, then celebrate the 10 minutes and take that perspective rather than finding, you know, and find ways to get to that next level rather than feeling frustrated because he's not already at 30 minutes, if that makes sense.
Right, right. And a lot of times it's finding different things that he really is interested in, but besides the obvious, besides the phone or besides, you know, a video game or something. He won't go down the basement anyway, but, you know, to stop and think, okay, really, what else would he do, you know, in his room besides, or, you know, wherever, besides something that's quick and easy. You know, like he likes to play with electricity kits, so it might take a minute for me to set it up for him, but if I set it up, you know, or Legos or whatever it is, if I set it up and get him started on it, it might be something he might continue longer than if I was kind of in panic mode and just trying to find a quick solution.
Yeah, there's a webinar I'm going to mention that I think I did it last spring, like January, February, March, and it was about the foundations of what it takes to put a reward system in place that really works. And it talked about some of the different nuances and some of the underlying things, and I would encourage you to listen to that if you have time to do that. And
do you remember the name of it?
Yeah, it's in fact, I can look here because it's out on the website. And I'll put it in the, for the folks too, we'll put it in the Monday morning message so that people have the link next Monday. It was called, it was January 31st, 2013, How to Implement a Reward System That Really Works. And one of the things, and I don't know if I've got a tip sheet, but I've read an article before that was kind of like here's like 7 questions you can ask your kid that'll help you to figure out what it is that motivates them.
Ah, okay. Yeah, that'd be great.
So I don't know if we wrote a blog on that or whether I can find that article, but I will look for it for you if it's something of interest.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Because it's hard because it's, you know, and a lot of us don't want to go to that normal sort of, okay, I'm going to reward you with screen time. Now, in my house, that's the reward because that's what everybody wants. That's all that my kids do for their free time. But, you know, I think at different ages you want to find different things. And whether it's, you know, reading with mom or, you know, helping make dinner or a dance party or whatever it is, you know, find something that's fun and easy that is engaging that, you know, rewards them for the thing. And the thing I love about kind of that engagement is that if he's feeling isolated and separated, then doing something that's together would be a natural, wonderful reward.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think that's the most that I got out of today, too, is just, I think, and I don't know if I realized it until today, I think already in my head, I'm already thinking that he's not capable and not going to do it. Like, I've already set that up. So I'm just managing through, you know, the chaos of whatever has to get done with him, with the interruptions. Like, I don't even try because I don't even think he's capable of doing it.
Right, and that's exactly what happens, is that we have a thought in our head, and that thought is always going to lead to an action. So if you always believe that he can never do this, then you're always going to not try.
Right.
You can come up with a new thought that you're willing to consider, a new perspective that you're willing to even just consider might be true. That's the only way you'll be able to behave any differently. And that's the reality of action. I mean, it's the same thing whenever you want to make a change. So if you want to start going to the gym, if you think, okay, I went to the gym before and I never lost weight, so I'm not going to bother to do it anymore, you're just not going to go to the gym. But if if you're willing to consider that maybe this time it'll be different, then you're going to be able to go to the gym. So that just it's really an interesting sort of behavioral psychology reality, is that every thought leads to a particular feeling, which leads to a particular action. So we have to get to a new thought if we want to have a new action. And it's the same thing with our kids. So if our kids are doing something, we have to figure out what's the thought and the feeling behind it if we want to get them to a new action, which is where this kind of other conversation is, you know, how does helping your child look at things from a different perspective help you as a parent?
Yeah, so that's the question I guess I still have. I mean, how can I help him look at it differently? I guess look at it as helping mommy, I guess, is, as you were saying.
If he feels That's a like great example. So it's like he feels like, oh my gosh, I got it. You know, so getting real clear, of course you're sad. You feel like you're being punished and you have to go off and be by yourself in your room. Well, what if we looked at it as, wow, mommy needs a break. She needs 10 minutes to kind of cool off and chill and relax. And once I've done that, then I'm going to have even more energy and we can play and we can have more fun because I'll be really rested and relaxed. Can you see that and help him to create the new story?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think he may still be so, I mean, I could be, see, again, I just already automatically think that he's not capable of that, but, I mean, I can always try it and see.
Yeah.
Because I automatically think, oh, he's not going to care whether I'm tired or not.
Well, and so you'll play with it and you'll find a perspective for both of you that makes sense.
Right. Exactly.
All right. So let's do our wrap-up here for the folks on the phone. We're getting close to time. And, again, you know, we're talking about perspective. We're talking about being willing to consider an alternative. We're talking about the disability perspective, lots of stuff going on here. And I think that one of the most important things that I'm hoping people will see is that this alternative perspective is really the thing that enables us to move to different action. So the four questions we ask at the end of each session are, what did I learn or get clear about today? How can I apply this to my life right now? What is a realistic action step for me to take? And how can I set myself up for success? So just take a minute and write that down. If you're listening on the phone, would love for you to share your thoughts out on the Facebook forum with a group and let us know what you learned about perspective. And Whitney, if you want to do a quick wrap-up and just let us know what you're thinking about and where you're heading this next couple of weeks, that would be great.
So the first one is, what did I learn about today?
Yeah.
Right. Just about how important perspective is, and instead of always thinking the worst and kind of disaster fantasize about something, to kind of turn it into a positive story to help me manage through that time period where I need to accomplish something or get something done, and just think of a new perspective on what the outcome may be instead of limiting myself to always thinking the worst.
Mm-hmm. And so what's the practical application of that for you?
I am, you know, like I had mentioned before with Preston, I'm going to try to find ways where he is capable of, you know, playing independently and thinking of, instead of thinking that he can't do it, and just managing through the interruptions to, you know, think that he can find something that he can do and play with while I need to get done other tasks at home. And, you know, kind of experiment with that. I guess just change my thought on instead of more giving him the benefit of the doubt instead of assuming that we're kind of stuck in a chaotic household.
Right. And is there anything you need to do to set yourself up for success?
Review my notes. You know, just really look back at, you know, look. I think, actually, to be honest, set time for myself, you know, in the beginning of the day or just even throughout the day to revisit some of this stuff instead of just getting, you know, caught up in the daily activities from moving from point A to B to C, and to remind myself to use these tools, because I think it's so easy just if it's not there and if you're not using them, if you're not looking at it, like refreshing your brain, then you forget. Even if it was just the day before, the day, you know, or 2 days before. So I think just, you know, helping myself stay prepared.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. Great. Well, how are you feeling about the next adventure?
Good. Yeah, I feel like I, you know, have a few things I can try, and tonight will be a crucial night. So a lot of things due tomorrow. So at least I can set myself up with some different ideas of what he can work on tonight to try and see how it goes.
Right, right. Well, so for those of you on the phone, our next session is on the 19th. We're going to be talking about where to focus, another great conversation. So, Whitney, can you stand for just one more minute? I'm going to turn off the recording, if you don't mind.
Sure.